Today is Wednesday. It's November 10th, 2021. It's 1:34 in the afternoon. Hi, this is John Williams, and this is the Mincing Rascals podcast. Listen for me weekdays on WGN Radio from 9 to noon.
Hi, it's John Hanson from Block Club Chicago, and you can hear me on WGN Radio's Saturdays, 3 to 5.
We're Anthony Pope, CW26.
I'm Lisa Donovan with the Chicago Tribune.
This is Eric Zorn, the highly distracted editor and publisher of the Picayune Sentinel newsletter.
Now, this might be the worst podcast we've ever posted since Even As We Speak, if that's what you're referring to, Eric. Kyle Rittenhouse is on the stand. I think what's happening right now is the defense and the prosecution and the judge are all arguing about whether or not some evidence will be admitted, whether or not they can refer to certain things that Kyle said or did previously. And this thing today almost seems like it's on the verge of a mistrial. Lisa, is that your read on it? Is that the way you've been following it today?
When the prosecution went to question him, they brought up some issues that were in pretrial they were told not to bring up, including some discussion, standard discussion of like him not talking to law enforcement or detailing for law enforcement, what unfolded. And, you know, this is, you know, you have a right to remain silent. And so the judge really went after the prosecution on this.
That's the first time he excused the jury, said everybody out. And then he was yelling. His microphone was distorting. The judge was so loud.
So loud. That's right. And so it seemed to me that there was some blurring, and I don't know all the fine points. There was some blurring of sort of that they were violating some pretrial motions in which the judge said you can't bring this up, and the longstanding, the 70-year-old rule that you have a right to remain silent and not say anything. And so the judge went to town on the prosecution. It happened twice.
Also at issue was, just as a for instance, another thing that they're arguing about, 15 days before he was in Kenosha, Kyle threatened to shoot some shoplifters. And they said, okay, is that germane here? And the judge said what he posted that day and what he did in the moment in Kenosha are not related. They're not sufficiently similar to show a pattern.
I think what happened with the shoplifter thing was that he said this on a video to a friend that he wishes he had his gun with him because he would shoot the shoplifters, that he didn't actually threaten the shoplifters.
Right, yeah.
But back to this motion for a mistrial, which apparently has been denied. This is odd that we have to do this right in the middle of all this news breaking all around us. I don't think for a second that the defense really wanted a mistrial.
No, they don't. They want that jury to go away right now because the defense has this in the bag. Keep going, Eric.
You don't know what I was going to say. I thought the prosecution's case, the prosecution is playing a really difficult hand. I mean, they have in Rosenbaum, the first guy who Rittenhouse shot, is not at all a sympathetic character. He was swearing at and threatening people all evening. Rittenhouse testified this morning that twice he threatened his life before their encounter happened, and then Rosenbaum chases Rittenhouse at a dead run across the parking lot, grabs for his gun. I think that the state has a really difficult hurdle to cross, and the witnesses that the state themselves have put on have shown that Kenosha that night was really chaotic and kind of frightening for people, so that the idea that everyone would be a little bit on high alert and very tense, the state was making that case. So I don't think they really wanted to have a mistrial declared. I think they're on the off chance that Rittenhouse is convicted on the most serious charges, they want some grounds for appeal. But I think they would be really upset if there was a mistrial declared at any point.
It seems so strange for the prosecution to open up their questioning along the lines of, well, did you know that this was going to be deadly force? Did you know that this was going to injure somebody? Of course. I'm not taking a side either way, but of course he was shooting to stop the threat. And under Wisconsin law, that's allowed. So I think you have to traverse another course if you're going to try to prosecute this person. I don't think you can open with that, because the defense can come back and say, yes, he was shooting to stop the threat. He was trying to protect himself.
And by the way, Kyle Rittenhouse is scrubbed and rehearsed. he is really good on the stand. Mm-hmm. He is as sympathetic as he can be. He seems to know the right answers to the questions, and he seems to know how to dodge them. For instance, did you have the right to have that gun? That's a slam dunk for the prosecution, and Kyle muddled the whole thing. Now, I'm not sure if he was supposed to have that gun, because he said, well, my friend bought it, and he let me use it, and when I turned 18, then I would purchase it. The prosecuting attorney did not seem to sort of anticipate that little end around, and the whole thing just kind of fell apart there. I don't know that I'm disappointed, because I don't know what I was expecting, but I see how difficult it is for the state to make their case.
Yeah, this prosecutor just has failed completely to show his teeth, in a sense, right? Yeah. You got to nail down, if you're the prosecution, you know, why and how Rittenhouse killed two people and shot a third. And so far, that's not been done. Mm-hmm. So like you were saying, John, it feels like a slam dunk if you're the defense at this one, because the prosecution is getting blown out at this point. This is not close in terms of the case they're presenting. And, you know, they could do a better job, because I'll be honest with you. There's holes to poke in. Kyle Rittenhouse here talking about he's going around giving first aid with an AR-15. Excuse me, what? What first aid you doing with an AR-15? Yeah, there's things you can attack, and they were not properly doing that, which is kind of surprising given the experience. This is a very experienced prosecutor, and it just seems like he's not giving his best game here.
What's jumping out at you, John?
Well, honestly, I have been adhering to some mental health safety, and I have been staying away completely.
Wow.
I can't. I love trials, too. I usually eat them up. I can't do this one. Mm. And I think it's because I know which way it's going to go. And I think I know that people that say Black Lives Matter are going to be incredibly upset. People that say All Lives Matter are going to celebrate. And it is a disgusting display of what our society has become. And I try and stay away from this stuff. Because look at this reasonable conversation we're having. You guys are watching the evidence. You're looking at it. And you are finding the gray areas and the truths of what's happening. But people don't do that anymore. And so many millions and millions and millions of people, no matter which way this goes, are going to be so pissed. And they're going to be yelling at each other so loudly. And I just can't do it anymore.
Well, I totally understand what you're saying, because I'm certainly picking this up on social media and in my feeds, which is that Kyle Rittenhouse is really not on trial here as far as the public is concerned. What's on trial here is the right to open carry a gun in Wisconsin, which I think is a bad idea, but it is the law in Wisconsin. The Proud Boys are on trial. This sort of paramilitary sense that Rittenhouse and his friends had is on trial. And in another sense, the rights of people to protest is on trial, and the validity of some disruptive and even violent protests is on trial, that there's all sorts of atmospherics to this trial that are really not relevant to the exact point of, like, what happened in those few moments when Kyle Rittenhouse shot those people when he was under attack by them. And that's what this trial is focusing on. Everybody else is seeing all the other atmospherics. When Rittenhouse broke down crying on the stand this morning, most of the people in my social media feed, which skews pretty left, thought he was acting. They're saying, "Oh, what a bad actor." Yeah, I didn't even see any tears in his eyes.
I've seen memes already of crying Rittenhouse replacing crying Jordan.
Oh, yeah. Dude was acting completely.
You think so? Oh, my God. I completely disagree. But go ahead, Eric.
No, I mean, I think that, okay, let's say that he was. That was a real risk, because he was doing fine on the stand, as John says. He was kind of calm, and this was still in the direct examination. He was calm, telling his story. He was looking like he was under control, and then suddenly he just breaks down when he starts talking about this attack. Let's say he decided to act and do that. Unless he believes that he is really convincing as a weeper on command, that's going to really turn the jury off. I mean, that you could lose several jurors by faking crying when you don't need to. So that makes me think that he probably was very overwrought at that moment. And yeah, you know, you can always say, I mean, but I guess you got to think, if you were sympathetic to him, would you think he was crying? Would you think he was faking it or not? Or is your view of how he was crying based on your view of his politics?
The only people who have to be convinced of whether he was faking it or or doing it at this point is the jury. And I don't know if anybody read the Tribune report on this that just came out, but they said as some of the jurors were leaving, because the judge called for a break is when he broke down, which is typically the case, just to allow the person on the witness stand to get their bearings, and also so that there's not sort of, you know, sympathy. So anyway, so when the jurors were walking out, Christy Gutowski and Stacey St. Clair from the Tribune reported that it was clear that some of the jurors looked at him apparently sympathetic toward him, him and him breaking down.
Brandon, I don't like this kid either, but I thought his emotions were genuine. You didn't see it that way, did you?
Not at all. I could believe him feeling emotion, feeling trauma. I can't even imagine what it's like to kill somebody. That alone, I don't know what that does to you mentally. So I'm in no way not sympathetic to that. What appeared to me to where it became acting was where I felt like he was really leaning into it. I think he really was crying at first. Then it became over the top. When you look at his behavior before this, leading up to this, it didn't match up with all of a sudden this breakdown. If it's genuine, is he really having a breakdown for that incident himself? Did he really fear for his life?
Mm-hmm.
Or is he fearful of the consequences that are potentially in front of him for doing what he did? And yes, obviously, I am, you know, not as sympathetic to his side of the story. It seemed like a little bit of theater.
It actually seemed to me that he was having some kind of moment of panic thinking about it.
It felt like a panic attack. He was having trouble breathing. He physically started to convulse. I mean, it was that was that rot, or he was acting that rot. But either way, that's what you saw on TV today. And so when the jury was dismissed, the prosecutor asked at one point, I want to show the picture of him standing with the Proud Boys in the bar after the shooting, because if this is really a genuine emotional reaction, if you know you're on trial for killing somebody and you feel really bad about killing somebody, but by God, you had to because your life was in jeopardy, what are you doing hanging out at a bar with the Proud Boys? Flashing the okay. And he said, we won't say who he was hanging with. We'll blur their faces. So they were going to say, this does not look like a person who cares about life. This looks like a person who would just shoot you because he didn't like you.
Was he supposed to be morose for the last year and a half?
Maybe when you get out of jail for it, yes. What are you talking about, Eric?
He's human. You can get pictures of people laughing. I don't think any more highly of him than you do, John, or either John, anybody on this panel, I don't think. But the thing is, like, the fact that he had moments where he was surrounded by people who were supporting him and that made him feel good, weeks or months after the incident, he doesn't have to be, obviously this was really traumatic, but he also doesn't, I don't think, feel particularly guilty about it.
He feels
bad about it, but I don't think he feels guilty about it. And I don't think that. So I don't know why that would be relevant to you.
That's why this whole thing is sickening. That's why if this verdict, which it looks like comes back, we'll see, is not guilty, there's going to be two reactions that further destroy our country. One is from the far right that celebrate him. And we're going to have Congressman Rittenhouse in 7 years, for God's sakes, when he's eligible to run. And that's horrible. Then we're going to have the reaction of people that can't see clearly about what self-defense is, what's within the right, and that no matter what, he should be going to prison for the rest of his life, even if he legitimately feared for his own life and was acting essentially legally, except for having the gun there. Both reactions furthered this cultural insane divide we have in this country and fanned the flames. And I'm so scared of this continuing growing thing. All I can do is look away.
Well, there were news reports just this morning that were saying that Chicago police are going to be on high alert. The leaves are canceled or something for this weekend in anticipation of reaction to the Rittenhouse verdict. I imagine the reaction you would see would be if he is found not guilty on the most serious charges, which I would expect, given the way things have been going. I don't, though, think that people are going to take to the streets in violent protest over this. My fear is more that this really fuels the idea that it's okay to carry long guns into difficult situation like this. And I would really like to see the right of open carry in particular restricted, maybe banned. Certainly, it would seem to me that if you have a situation like they had in Kenosha that night, that there ought to be a way that law enforcement could declare an absolute ban on the carrying of any weapons in that protest zone at that time. That would be something, that would be some sort of a compromise thing, but a not guilty verdict seems like it would make that less likely.
The larger picture here is that the Department of Justice probably needs to come in and take a hard look at that police department. Just in view of what has been put out during this trial. I mean, we've heard snippets of it, you know, the reporting that, okay, they told him, you know, they let him go or whatever else. That somebody carrying a long gun walked up to law enforcement and said, I just shot some people. And they're told by his own testimony, they told him to get the F out of the way or he was going to get maced.
Yeah.
We can talk about the open carry and all of that stuff. I understand all of that. I don't know how far we're going to get with that in this country at this moment. I think a hard look at law enforcement and the police department. I don't care what side of the political spectrum you're on. You want a police department to operate appropriately. And if somebody is walking up to you with a long gun and they said they just shot somebody, there should be some reaction, because there's also some people behind saying, hey, and you can hear it in the video. Hey, he just shot these guys.
Right. Follow-up question would be good.
This is the bigger picture. I know.
Well, Rittenhouse saying that he got a bulletproof vest from police. You could make the argument police empowered him.
Let's just go back for a second to the moment that Kyle Rittenhouse shot Gage Grosskreutz. You know, the video that we posted and that I shared with you guys shows the 90-second real-time video of people coming upon Kyle, Kyle running and falling, Kyle shooting, and then Kyle surrendering. 90 seconds. It's like that. It's amazing how quickly all that happens and how clearly it is all captured. When you saw that, was it clear to you that it was self-defense, or was it clear to you that he was the aggressor? I mean, I'm not sure that that video, however graphic, absolutely said something about his guilt or innocence.
It doesn't for me, because it didn't give you enough of what happened before that, or what may have been provoked before that. It just shows us what happened in that moment. And in that moment, you know, you can frame a narrative either side based off just those 90 seconds. So I, you know, and I'm definitely no self-defense expert, but from what I saw, I wouldn't say firmly that, you know, oh, totally, case shut. He was defending himself, self-defense all the way. Because I don't know what happened before that leading up to it. And there's been statements and testimony to you know, support the theory that he was egging people on. He was making jokes about shooting people. He was, you know, and he's waving a gun around, which naturally is going to incite a reaction. I don't care what neighborhood you're in or where you're at. If somebody's waving a gun around, that's not going to get people to be friendly around you. That's for sure.
I don't know that he was waving the gun around. He was certainly carrying it around. But that's not normal. But it's not, you know, it's legal. And that's the weird thing. I mean, that's the thing that I get stuck on, which is like, it was a bad idea to have people carrying long guns around that protest.
I wish there was an in-between charge that there could be between, like, almost like you're not guilty by self-defense, but it's like, I hate to say it like that, but like, and bleep that out. Sorry, John. But like, that's, I mean, because like, I watched those 90 seconds, John, to your point, and I'd say, yeah, I'd be scared for my life.
Well, that's the thing, because what maybe Kyle knew, the 8 or so seconds prior to him firing his first shots, you see a bunch of people all running in the same direction, but really running at Kyle. And somebody says, what happened? And they said, that dude shot somebody. And now it starts to look like one of those videos we saw on the west side of Chicago not that long ago. I don't mean the west side shooting. I mean the Loop shooting, where there was just violence going on and people were gathering around it and participating in it. And I thought, this is what's going to happen to Kyle. This mob's going to defend on him, and they're going to kill him with their bare hands. That's just the 8-second vibe you had from that thing. I still am frustrated that they don't try and make the case that in his self-defense, instead of killing people, he could have fought with his fists, or he could have got up and run, or he could have sought the help of somebody else. I don't know what your options are, but just shooting people.
I think that we're trying to sort of put our own world experience into the world experience of whatever happened in the loop and whatever was happening up there. I don't think that you can. He wasn't just sort of, I know that he's been billed as sort of this chaos tourist by the prosecution. No, his father lived there. He knew this town.
But, you know, with the worldview point, it is tough to not put your own worldview in it because, you know, I think about this open carry law, maybe legal, but legal for who? Like if Kyle Rittenhouse is Keyshawn Rittenhouse, if he's a young black kid, is he even getting that far with a long gun? You know, is the law colorblind in that respect? That really can't be litigated in this case necessarily, but that's part of where the larger frustration is as well, too.
Well before you were born, Brandon, the serious gun control laws in California were prompted by the Black Panthers carrying long guns in Oakland. And that's what got Governor Ronald Reagan and everybody else to say, well, we got to crack down on the possession of handguns. So you're absolutely right about that. The other thing I just want to add is that guns really made this problem a lot worse. I'm not sure why Rosenbaum chased after Rittenhouse the way he did, and you ask why didn't he turn around and fight with his fists? Well, I think the problem is that if you've got a gun like that and someone is coming at you and they get the gun away from you and they're acting that crazy, that gun could be turned on you. So it ramps up the stakes on both sides. If those two had been in a fist fight, we would certainly be talking about that today. But the guns being there really raised the stakes of everything that happened. Again, I mean, I look at that 90 seconds and I see Rittenhouse under attack, defending himself. I think he was probably in fear of death or great bodily harm, and that the jury's going to acquit him on those most serious charges. They may find some compromise charge. One of the charges carries like 12 years, like reckless use of a firearm
or endangering
somebody else
of the videographer of the Daily Caller videographer.
So it's possible that maybe when they get in the jury room and they're looking for a compromise, because there are going to be people who feel strongly on both sides in that jury room. If that jury room is anything like America, so they may want to find, they're going to convict him on the gun charge, but that's a misdemeanor and that's nothing. It's a slap on the wrist. If that, they may find some sort of compromise, conviction. I wouldn't bet on that, but that's certainly much more of a possibility.
Well, I'm not going to bet on I will bet that he's not convicted, but I don't know that he'll be found not guilty. I think I'd put my money on a hung jury on this one.
Guns and policing, of course, are important issues coming out of this, but I'm taking a broader look at a country that is in two trenches, and this trial will have everyone dig 2 inches deeper. And be into deeper. And there's a lot of people in the middle who at least are reasoned and can see both sides. I think most of us here in this room, all of us here, are on that side. But we're the ones getting shot at, metaphorically speaking. Like, I'm just so worried about where we're going after this. And guns and policing are important. We're not going to get to those issues. Those issues are nothing. They're never going to be addressed given the current climate. We can't address them right now.
I know my fear is kind of along the realms of where John is at. Mine is the idea of like this vigilante justice angle. Who's to say other people don't see Rittenhouse as a hero and say, yeah, you want to get something done in your community, take up arms and make it happen. Like this is dangerous territory. I think we're headed down. Honestly,
that's why I was saying that, it's up to the police to sort of draw that line in the sand and say, hey, these are the rules.
Right.
These are the rules. That's why I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska. I know that's bigger than Kenosha, but I can't imagine even some of the communities surrounding there, smaller ones, or that would happen. It seems like the cops would really hop on that and sort of say, nope.
That was a difficult night for the Kenosha Police Department. I think they did fail. Obviously, they should not have let Kyle walk away, but that shooting took place after the fact. And, John, I thought that what you were going to get to was my fear is that the circumstances that begat this shooting might repeat themselves with rioting in the street, chaos, who's got a gun, what is something burning, are we going to protect something? This might beget the very same situation, depending on what the verdict is.
You're right. I'm more worried about what happens in 2024 and what happens in elections in this country. I mean, you can draw a line from January 6th, 2021 to something much worse in 2024, 2025 with a backbone of people can carry guns and shoot at protesters. They've gotten away with it. Even if the verdict, I believe, is right and correct, I think it contributes, though, to a world where that's okay. And I think we are small potatoes looking at this. And maybe I'm just in a mood today and alarm bells for no reason. But
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying, John. This is why I think it's really important for us to realize what this trial is not about, and right. to try to tamp down that reaction. Like, this means that it's okay. No, this was a Kyle Rittenhouse. Even if he's acquitted, he went through a considerable amount of hell over this, and it's not something that anybody else ought to want to go through. And it's still a bad thing to shoot people on the streets, whether they're attacking you or not. And I hope that we don't think, well, because he was legally justified in doing it, if mm-hmm. that's the verdict, that means that we should all take up arms and go out and start shooting at each other, which is, I take your point and your fear very seriously.
Hopefully the Proud Boys that listen to this podcast hear that.
A huge part of our audience.
I'm well, sure. John, you alluded to the upcoming election. Let's go to what is happening with Congressman Adam Kinzinger, who we've been talking about a lot lately, but now that he's announced this Republican congressman from the suburbs that he's not going to run for re-election. Remember, he was one of the two Republican members of the House who voted to impeach Donald Trump and has been an outspoken critic of him. Now he says he's not going to run for the newly drawn district in that area. Is he going to run for president? Is he going to run for governor? I thought the idea that he would run for president sounded bizarre. If you can't win your local district, what makes you think you can be president? But the more I think about it and even talk to people about it, he only does national interviews.
I immediately dismissed the governor thing a few weeks ago. I think a lot of people did. And not the more, right, not Lisa. No, right. You were the first one, and it maybe was on the stage of the Tivoli that you even gave it a little bit more credence.
Yes, she did.
There is perhaps an appetite. If there's a state that a Republican can win that's a non-Trumper, it's in Illinois, right? I think that there's a lot of conservatives that might be looking for a candidate like Adam Kinzinger. I just think that Governor Pritzker is too popular to beat. He is not someone that is hated. I mean, he's hated in some corners, don't get me wrong. But a lot of people have been supportive of his COVID response. And by a lot, I mean 55 to 60, which will do you just fine. I think he could potentially be this post-Trump person, but not if he loses a statewide race in Illinois. So he's going to have to be very calculated about it because he can't lose the next race he's in.
Well, there was some talk that the reason Kinzinger didn't run for Congress was that they drew him into a district with Darren LaHood, and that this was going to be a real problem for him. You can run in any district you want in Illinois. There is not a single congressional district. There's not a way that Democrats could have drawn a map in Illinois of any sort in which Adam Kinzinger wins the Republican primary, because the Republican Party, even in Illinois, is in the thrall of Trump. A Quinnipiac poll last month found that Trump has an 86% favorable rating among Republican adults, and he's the favorite among Republicans for the 2024 presidential nomination. So if you're an anti-Trump Republican, you are in trouble anywhere. Now, the idea that I've floated here before, I think is possible, is that if Ken Griffin, the billionaire investor in Illinois, gets behind him and funds his candidacy for governor, he might be able to get enough votes in a primary to win out over the four candidates who are already announced for governor, the four Republican candidates who are announced in the primary. He might be able to thread the needle and win that primary. But I agree with John that Pritzker is going to be very hard to beat next time, because he has more money than God. He has more money even than Griffin.
I have more money than Griffin, but Kinzinger has been seen as sort of this outspoken anti-Trump person. And there are a lot of people, I think you're going to find there are a lot of down the middle of the road Republicans who, after voting for him, maybe even twice, have found that they do not like the antics. As I said, I'm from Nebraska. I have family in Nebraska and Iowa. I talked to my friend's parents, who a couple have openly admitted, yeah, we voted for him not once, but twice, because we loved what was happening with the economy. But they were at, and they don't know each other, absolutely said to a person, we did not agree what happened with January 6th. And that was a breaking point. And I feel like I am hearing this sort of louder drumbeat with that. This could indicate there is a road for moderate Republicans. A lot of business owners are really, really ticked off, and former business owners ticked off about the shutdown orders.
It also doesn't help that nationally and partially locally, the Democratic brand can't really identify it.
Yeah.
because they're not moving anything nationally.
Biden's a $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill wasn't enough for you, Brandon Pope.
They had to shrink that thing a lot.
No, not Biff. Biff was fine. All right, go on. Sorry.
Well, they did it, and it took forever, and it took a lot of wrangling.
Like, that's a bad thing, though. Like, I'm sorry, but this idea that they didn't ram through what they wanted or that it took a while, isn't that what they're supposed to do? Isn't that negotiation and compromise? I mean, why?
No, the Democrats are in control, and they're not. Right. They don't get along with each other.
Well, that's okay too. But in the meantime. But you do have a $1.2 trillion. They're going to make the Eisenhower four lanes all the way out to Wolf Road. I mean,
that's great. Yeah, add more pollution and hurt people who live along the sides.
I don't know, 20,000 jobs at $80,000 a year. Okay, I picked the wrong thing. But I'm just saying that what Democrats did, I don't think looks weak. But in this day and age where you need a strong man to say, here's what we're going to do and cuss and act like a bull in the China shop, yeah, it looks a little feckless. But at the end of the day, you got $1.2 trillion. And maybe it's not like we have the money anyway. It seems to me like that's a pretty good deal.
What do they stand for right now? That's the question.
They're telling you every day. People are just not listening. This idea that they have a bad messaging. Jayapal and Gottheimer, two politically separate Democrats standing together on Capitol Hill telling you exactly what they're for, gets no press coverage.
What is it then?
And we're in the press, and people are like, we don't know what's happening.
What is it?
It's every day.
Yeah, what is it?
The Build Back Better Act, what they're going to be trying to pass over the next couple of weeks, it's for affordable care, child care for young adults. Okay. It's for Medicare hearing, at least for certain seniors. They are really laying it out. It's just that no one wants the patients to actually analyze what it is, and then we blame, their messaging is terrible. They're trying to tell us. And we're just not listening.
Well, their messaging has not been great, John. Let's be honest, that they talked so much about the dollar amount and they weren't talking about what was in those dollar amounts. What you're saying is absolutely right, that a lot of these things are, not only are they really good things, in my opinion, they're things that are very good. They're in the opinion of most people.
I respectfully disagree. Like, Every interview I watch with a senator or a congressman, they tell you exactly what's in the bill. The follow-up question is, well, how are you wrangling this? And what is the top line dollar amount? It's the questions that are bad.
And these are the questions they did not ask when Trump was giving the tax cuts to the wealthy either.
John Williams' point, I respectfully disagree. I don't think that there was a lot of, heady debate and healthy debate over all this stuff. It was a couple of Democratic senators, Scalia and Manchin, holding things up because they couldn't decide what they wanted to do. This was sort of people trying to figure out what side they could play so they can get reelected. And they didn't. Ultimately, it was a party line split.
And in the end, it doesn't matter what we think of the messaging. The numbers are showing the messaging ain't working, whatever their messaging
that's
is.
That's fair. That's fair. That's fair.
The favorite, like, Biden's approval rating is not good at all right now. Congress is very bad as well, just like in the Trump era. So people are looking right now nationally and partially locally. We look at Chicago, Illinois, the violence uptick and all that, saying, okay, Democrats, what are you actually doing here? And do we need to make a shift?
And today, Ken Griffin went on stage at a New York Times event, and he is, he is trying to hang this crime issue on Pritzker.
Yeah. I want to read from the Crane's piece in just a second here, Lisa, because I think what Griffin said is really telling.
The first part of that infrastructure package was kind of the cookies were on the bottom shelf, because that was something that had been agreed to in the Senate. And Republicans were on board with it, and it was linking it to the Build Back Better plan, which was causing all the problems and all the friction in the Democratic Party. But at the end of the day, all this infighting that went on in October and early in November is all going to be forgotten. This is all like the sausage being made, and now people are going to be eating the sausage and they're going to like it. So I don't think that. So what's going to happen is that I think COVID is going to go away. I think that we had such good job numbers last week that people were posting "Thank you, Brandon" online for Biden.
You're very welcome, guys. You're very welcome.
I think that Biden's, we got a year now or 11 months for all these poll numbers to come around and for the Democrats to sell at least whatever part of the Build Back Better plan they can get passed. So I think anyone who's panicking right now is really premature.
So here's the story from Crane's Catherine Davis, dated November 10th of this year. Ken Griffin first voiced the possibility of moving Citadel due to rising crime at an Economic Club of Chicago event last month. At the time, Pritzker responded to Griffin's complaints, calling him a liar and saying that Griffin has worked to dismantle social services that prevent violence. "He called me a liar," Griffin said at Wednesday's event. "It's all about politics for him. It's not about people. I'm going to make sure that if he runs again, that I am all in to support the candidate who will beat him," Griffin continued. "He doesn't deserve to be the governor of our state." Talking today about crime in Chicago, Griffin said that over a recent weekend, one of his Citadel partners had a gun put to his head outside his home in Chicago. He didn't provide additional details on the incident, but said that on the following Monday, the colleague told him, "I don't know if I worked my whole life to live like this." Griffin also mentioned the story of a 24-year-old University of Chicago graduate who was shot and killed in Hyde Park yesterday. Griffin said the shooting happened a few blocks from his kid's school. Those two incidents follow one Griffin mentioned last month at the Economic Club, in which he said carjackers had attacked his security detail outside his Chicago home.
He's been building that message for the last month. So that's why I raised at that event the possibility of him bankrolling whoever runs against Pritzker.
And he's getting help. You look at what happened in Hyde Park. Activist Jamal Cole is running for Congress, had to duck for his life under a car.
With a bullet still in his arm from an earlier shooting.
Yeah.
Well, and Griffin said, "So I'm not sure I want to keep my offices in Chicago, 500-600 people." He has a mind. This is just him talking. Who knows what he's going to do? But he's actually out loud contemplating moving his offices because of the environment in Chicago. That might just be a shot across the bow.
Well, especially since when he opened his office, crime was way worse. So,
So you wonder if an Adam Kinzinger has a lane. Here's my brilliant idea. Kinzinger runs as a Democrat, and then all of those. Okay, never mind that idea.
What?
You're all making a face. If he can't win as because Kinzinger can't win as a Republican in Illinois, Eric Zorn said, and I'm thinking that I think there is an appetite for an Adam Kinzinger. If I voted Democrat in the past, but I thought there'd be a way to give Kinzinger some legs, I would do it. But I guess really the only hope is for him on the Republican Party. And that's, when you think about it, I was having this conversation with Terry Savage, the financial columnist, and we were just talking about federal policy with her, and we were trying to put our finger on who would be the dynamic Democrat that people could get behind, who would be outside of Donald Trump, the dynamic Republican that people can get behind. Does Adam Kinzinger present an opportunity for people to vote?
I love the idea. I like Adam Kinzinger. I like that he speaks his mind. I don't like all of his policies,
right,
but I love that he supports democracy. But if it's a Democrat who is pro-life and other things that Democrats like versus someone who's notably not, I mean, Adam Kinzinger, for what he is, he's a conservative Republican.
He totally is. So then, who is the Republican that can beat Donald Trump?
I don't think it exists. I don't think there is one.
Yeah, I don't honestly know. Mike Pompeo?
I don't know.
You're not even trying, John.
Can we just have a compromise election? Like, look, if the option was, we'll pull out of a hat from a list of three independents, I would take that over voting for Joe Biden or Donald Trump again.
You know, if Kinzinger could get one-on-one primary battles with Trump in some of these early primary states, he might be able to make a dent. Because Trump, I think there are a lot of people. Lisa, I talked about her friends and relatives who are Trump supporters. There's a lot of unease about Trump. I think that a lot of Republicans are not nearly as crazy as the crazies who are really wildly behind him, but they don't really see another alternative, and it's either going to be Trump or another 4 years for them of Biden or Kamala Harris. So if you could get someone like Kinzinger, maybe in a one-on-one situation, then he might at least make a dent. Maybe he would even beat Trump, because Trump's going to be older at that point, and his sell-by date, I believe, has long passed. And I do think that there are people out there who are ready for something else, but the person they may be ready for is like Madison Cawthorn or one of these much more crazy red hot Republicans. So maybe that's the person who's going to take him on and win. I don't know. Or maybe he won't. Or maybe he'll decide to anoint somebody to run as the next Trump.
Oh, you mean John Kennedy Jr.?
Yeah.
They're still there. They're still there singing in Daily Plaza.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are.
There are people still hanging out in Daily Plaza?
There are. The guy who originally broke down all the reporting tweeted yesterday. They were gathered together singing Country Roads and replaced West Virginia with Daily Plaza.
I think the fairest interpretation of what's happened in Dallas, and that is QAnon supporters rallying there, hanging out there, waiting for John F. Kennedy or John, his son, to appear. Donald Trump would somehow become president, appoint him as a running mate, then step down, and then Kennedy would become president. People hung out in Dallas for a while waiting for Kennedy to arrive. That's the backstory on all of that. Somebody pointed out that what that's really about is, sure, those people are crazy. They don't represent anything. There's not really that many of them. But you know what it's a reminder of is how lonely people are and how there are people out there who are looking for belonging, community, or even some kind of empowerment. And in the absence of feeling some connection, hate and stupid will fill the void, and they'll hitch their wagon to that right away. That's a little sociology, I guess, but I think that's really what that is. I know some people are really alarmed, like, we've got to take this thing seriously, and I don't think there's much bite in that thing.
Yeah, I agree. I also think between the two parts of that hypothetical, John Jr. rising from the dead and Donald Trump giving up power, I actually think John Jr. rising from the dead is more likely than Donald Trump ever giving up power.
Yeah, really. On. So John comes back from the dead, and then Trump goes, no way. And he goes, really? Yes. I came back from the dead?
Exactly.
And now, that was the deal!
I do feel bad for people that are sucked into that so completely.
Right, but right. They're pathetic. That's so bizarre. That's pathetic. That's not January 6th, people. That's crazy town. Do you guys just have anything to say to me about Aaron Rodgers and his apology for his non-apology?
Well, I mean, Aaron Rodgers lied to his teammates and he lied to the public, and he's paying a $14,000 fine. I don't know how he's ever going to afford that. I really wish that the league had cracked down on him a lot harder than they are clearly going to or not going to. It's a real betrayal. We've talked on this podcast before about Kyrie Irving, and at least Kyrie Irving is honest about what he's doing. And I mean, as irresponsible as I believe that it is, I think at least he's being straight with people. Aaron Rodgers was lying to people about what he was doing and getting in, you know, in a huddle with his teammates and breathing all over him. And I just think that was a really bad move on his part.
Where are you, Brandon?
If you're a member of the Green Bay Packers, you've already had some evidence that Aaron Rodgers is a bad teammate. All the antics he had this offseason about he didn't, you know, want to play, wanted to be traded, they drafted a different quarterback, he was in his feelings, boo-hoo. So you already have that drama that, you know, the team's like, oh, it's all about Aaron. This right here, I don't know how you can be a player in that locker room and think, yeah, this guy Aaron Rodgers is a team guy. He cares for us, not just as players, but as people. No way when he's willingly misleading and willing to put their families and their friends in jeopardy and in danger. I think it's terrible for Aaron Rodgers right now, and I do wonder in this offseason, he is supposedly not going to be a Green Bay Packer next season, is this going to impact how teams view him in free agency? I would assume it probably won't, because in the end, he's Aaron Rodgers.
He's great.
But I do wonder, will there be a team that had a GM or owner and says, you know, I take pause with this guy. He's not a team guy. He's not a good leader. And this showed major flaws that could damage our organization, not just financially, not just in terms of the locker room, but also the health and safety of our players and their families. You got to consider those things nowadays with COVID-19. And Aaron Rodgers just flew in the face of all of that. And it's stunning. People complain about Tom Brady and his political leanings, but I don't think Tom Brady would ever do something like that. Not any true leader of a football team would do that.
The most offensive thing is the woke mob is coming after him. I think that's crap.
Yeah. And it feels like a slur at this point when people say woke mob.
Yeah, right. And it's also, I just pulled up the New York Times recent COVID vaccine numbers. 98% of adults 65 have gotten at least a dose. 81% of all adults have gotten at least one dose of the vaccine. I think I'm going to try and focus a little bit more on that than the 19% that haven't.
But when you think of the woke mob, you don't think of Terry Bradshaw, who, right. to his credit, really just delivered.
I'd give Aaron Rodgers some advice. It would have been nice if he'd have just come to the Naval Academy and learned how to be honest.
Yeah.
Learn not to lie, because that's what you did, Aaron. You lied to everyone. I understand immunized, and unfortunately, we've got players that pretty much think only about themselves, and I'm extremely disappointed in the actions of Aaron Rodgers.
Brandon, I think you raised this, too. It's a whole different thing when we're talking about COVID and him possibly spreading it to somebody. You could be ending somebody else's career. You could be ending a teammate's career, never mind sort of at least taking them out for a few games. To that point, I wonder if some managers may think differently, some owners, team owners may think differently about bringing him aboard.
Boy, I don't. I mean, you know, I know Brandon said that too, but if you were pre-Justin Fields, if you were the Chicago Bears and he was available, and they said, yeah, but remember last year when he lied to us about COVID-19? Mm-hmm. And you're like, yeah, but he's Aaron Rodgers. The backup quarterback for him had trouble completing snaps. That's probably not even a fair contrast. But, I mean, I think most NFL teams would look right past that. And I think a lot of NFL fans would, too.
My only pushback on that would be, even if you were to kind of look past him endangering people's livelihoods, right? The impact on your football team in terms of games, he's not doing his team any favors missing. When you're not vaccinated, you have to miss more games than you would when you are vaccinated. So he's missed the last season's game against the Chiefs. They're already in a tough position there, trying to get to the playoffs, win their division, all that type of stuff. This next game's in question. He's got till Saturday to show no symptoms. He's got to prove that. And if he can't prove that, he's out Sunday, too, against the Seahawks. That's two big games. And when you're a team in playoff contention, let's say you're the Bears, let's say the Cleveland Browns say, hey, Aaron Rodgers, why not? Two games. You can't really afford that.
I think Tom Brady is not Aaron Rodgers because Tom Brady wants to win so badly that he wouldn't jeopardize his health because he wouldn't want to miss the game. He wouldn't want his team to lose. Aaron Rodgers, however competitive he is sufficiently selfish that he'll let the team lose rather than do what's in the best interest of the team.
Imagine if he was the host of Jeopardy. I mean, there's a whole category of science. Like, what's he just not going to let people answer those questions? He's not going to go for those?
He's going to call in Joe Rogan.
I love that Saturday Night Live skit. It's the first thing Pete Davidson said. Remember I hosted Jeopardy?
Yeah, right.
That's so great.
Can we just speak about football a little bit more? The taunting penalty?
What's that?
Yeah, I see it there behind you. Yeah.
Yeah. My Zoom background is the taunting penalty. You know, it's one of those things where I really support this rule. I mean, just the background is that Cassius Marsh, who was a practice squad guy, was called up Monday and he hit a key sack on Ben Roethlisberger with 3 minutes to go in the game. And rather than go to the sidelines and accept the plaudits of his teammates, he took about 10 steps toward the Steelers sideline and sort of looked at him with kind of like, how do you like me now pose? Because they cut him during training camp. And he got flagged for taunting and cost the Bears 15 yards, the ball, and a field goal for the Steelers, who won the game by 2 points. And everyone was very upset about it. And I mean, I think one can support the rule. I think it's a really good rule not to have taunting, that you can celebrate with your team, but don't celebrate in the face of the other team. But I do sort of wonder why the ref had to call it then, when it wasn't really a flagrant taunting. It was a taunting, but it wasn't flagrant. And so I thought, you know, the ref could have used his discretion, the kind of discretion that NFL refs have to use on every single play when there's holding. That's in every single play. They've got to use their discretion, and he didn't use his discretion there. So that's my feeling about the taunting incident.
Well, you don't want the referees or umpires in games to be the reason that a team won or lost. And that, Brandon, that one looked personal to me.
It seemed very personal. It seemed like the refs injecting themselves into the game. I'm actually the opposite of Eric. I am pro-taunting. I say taunt all you want. I think it makes the game more flavorful.
Yes.
You
know?
Well, they allow end zone celebrations. I mean, really, they do allow choreographed end zone celebrations, which is choreographed taunting to me. I think it's amazing that you ask those guys to play as fast and hard a game as dangerous as they do, and then you say, but after you break that guy's femur, don't you dare wag your finger at him. I'm like, come on. I'm not in favor of it. It's not how I would play a game, but I don't know how these people are supposed to have these on-off switches, right? That you can be that jacked up, but then you have to suddenly quietly go back and accept the plaudits of your teammates. I mean,
there are plaudits. There are 14 teams, according to the Sun-Times, that have not had a taunting penalty this year, and the Bears have had 3. So there's a coaching issue here going on, too.
Oh, a coaching issue?
Yeah.
No, you're going to blame the coaches for not having respectable, like, conversational lessons as part of their game planning?
I'm with
Eric on this one. It shows a lack of the team is out of control.
Man, it's going to be wind sprints, then manners and deportment.
We are out of time. That's it. John Hansen, thank you for joining us. Eric Zorn, Lisa Donovan, Brandon Pope. That's it, guys. Thanks for your thoughts today. I'm John Williams. We are produced by Ashley Byhan and Elif Garris. We'll drop another podcast on you next week. Yeah, I'm glad you got to that, Eric.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, that was fun. It was a good one. Now back to the Rittenhouse trial. I got to see what's going on.
I've got to write something quick, but yeah.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.